Hi, I'm Debbie. Welcome to the Chaos Catalyst podcast, the go-to podcast for leaders who want to turn chaos into growth. Are you keen on stepping up your leadership game or discovering fresh approaches for your team or organization? Stay tuned for advice and anecdotes from people just like you. Hi, this is Debbie. Welcome back to the Chaos Catalyst podcast. This week's episode is a bit special. I just got back from Singapore. I was invited to do a team coaching over there for a client of mine with whom I've been working for several years, almost a decade. And after having worked with the European team, they asked me if I could do some of my magic, as they said, with the team in Asia. I was a bit apprehensive, to be honest, because the Asian culture is so different from our culture. And I wasn't sure whether my story would stick, whether my way of working would stick. But it turned out that all of my apprehensions and anxiety wasn't necessary. I met with the team. They turned out to be fantastic people. And the one thing I've learned from the Asian culture, if I can generalize it that wide, is the tremendous respect that they have for people and for human interaction. So I really felt welcomed. I really felt appreciated for my expertise. And people were really almost like soaking all of the wisdom that they thought I could share with them. So I had a fantastic few days with the group. And I wanted to share some of the insights. And maybe the first insight I wanted to share was just that of my journey there, because I left my house, I took the plane, I flew to Asia all by myself. And when I landed there, I realized I'm in a place now without context. There's nobody here who knows me. There's nobody here who expects anything of me. Nobody knows my story. Nobody knows my history. Hell, nobody even knows my name. And the best friend I had in that new place was the taxi driver who drove me from the airport to my hotel. And that was a curious experiment. It was an interesting experiment in the sense that I realized that today I can be anybody I want to be. And it's very interesting to see what choices am I going to make in a context where there are no people waiting for me, because the first few days in Singapore I spend on my own. So I didn't have any travel company. There was nobody waiting for me. I didn't have to get up in the morning. I didn't have to do any work. It was so interesting for me to discover, who am I in that type of context? Am I a person who will start to enjoy their vacation and sleep in? Am I the person who will start reading books? Am I the person who will hide behind a ton of work and stay in the hotel room and, you know, tap away on my computer? Or am I the type of person who wants to face the day and go on the adventure? And it turned out to be the latter. I couldn't wait to wake up. Might have also been the jet lag, but I was awake quite early. I went to the breakfast area, which was an adventure in itself, because the first day I ate dried shrimp with seaweed for breakfast and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed having the different tastes. I thoroughly enjoyed the fact that my body was in a bit of a limbo as well, because with the time difference and everything and not having had a lot of sleep on the plane, it felt a bit off. Everything felt off. The food was strange. My body felt strange. I was in a country where, as I said, nobody knew me. But it turned out to be a great adventure. So as soon as I could after breakfast, I left the hotel room. I started walking and basically I met the day at face value. I let the day guide me. I decided, you know, just follow my feet and see where they take me. And I had no plan. I had no reservations. I had nothing or nobody to take into account. So I just started walking. And it turned out to be one of the nicest experiences I think I've had in my life. I will definitely remember it somewhere in my top 5 or top 10 as one of the nicest experiences, because I experienced a feeling of utter freedom. There was nobody I had to take care of. And trust me, I love taking care of my kids, but it was also fun not to having to take care of anybody, not to being in a professional setting where people expect wisdom or expect coaching or expect some output from you. It was just me in a totally new setting. So I started walking, started looking at this totally new place, and I thoroughly enjoyed all of the interfaces I met. So as I explained in the last episode, I'm a big fan of interfaces because I believe that's where the magic happens. The magic happens at the interface between technology and art, between science and beauty, between different cultures, between nationalities, between religions. And this place, Singapore, is especially well equipped with lots of different interfaces. It really truly is a melting pot of different cultures, different religions. And the beauty of it is that everybody is so respectful and so understanding of each other's background. So it is an international setting by default. So by default, you are embraced in your uniqueness. And this is something I really felt. And this allowed me to feel very safe, secure, and free in this context. So I just started exploring, walked into temples, which was also a bit of, you know, you need to check whether are you allowed to walk into the temple. I noticed I had to take off my shoes and the socks. How can I walk? Where can I walk? What is allowed? Am I allowed to take pictures? You know, what are the others doing? So you're really thrown into a context where you don't know the rules. But because everybody is so respectful and so open, you quickly learn. And I think this is one of the prerequisites also in your organization. If you want new people to learn, this welcoming attitude, this openness, this lack of judgment on how other people do it differently is really crucial for people to feel welcome and for people to be able to learn. So this is something I really felt and experienced in those first few hours in Singapore. So here I am walking into temples, then walking around, visiting things, looking at the beautiful trees and the beautiful plants that are everywhere in Singapore. They call it the city in a garden. So it's really beautiful. It's green. It's luscious. It's very tropical. It was 30 plus degrees. So I just walked around feeling free. Then I felt a bit hungry. So I decided to look for food, and food came my way, and I ate something very strange and delicious at the same time. So every one of my five or six senses I have was continuously stimulated, was continuously challenged with new tastes, new smells. I remember the first few days in Singapore, I really thought there was a strange smell. After a few days, I stopped smelling it. But in the first few days, and also in the hotel, I sensed this smell that I've never smelled before. So all of the senses were challenged in a different way. And the fact that it did not freak me out was really related to the fact that it was a very welcoming and reassuring context. For instance, the people in the hotel were also very, very helpful, very surface-oriented. They wanted me to have the best stay I could possibly have, so I could ask them whatever I needed and they would provide for it. The other thing that Singapore is really great at is convenience. It is the most convenient place I have ever been to. It's like they've thought through everything. Everything is arranged. Everything is taken care of. You just need to take care of your own business. All the rest is there. So the convenience you can mainly see in the metro. You don't even need to buy a ticket. You just tap with your credit card and the gates open and you can take the metro. And when you leave the metro, you tap your credit card again. And then the amount that you spent is deducted from your credit card. So you don't need to buy a ticket. You can just roam around freely. There are toilets everywhere. So you can just stay out of your hotel room the whole day. There's nothing you need. You can rest. You can have a massage. You don't need appointments to book a massage. You just walk into a massage salon and see if they have an available spot. So actually, this was the first time in my life I actually truly enjoyed shopping because I could do it at my own tempo, at my own pace, be very slow about it, because I get easily overwhelmed in shopping malls. And in Asia, they are 10 times the size of our shopping malls in Europe, at least 10 times the size. So I was a bit hesitant to go in, but I felt, okay, it's for the experience. We're here to explore. And I actually started to enjoy it, seeing different things, taking it at my own pace. And after, you know, when my feet started to feel sore, I just popped into a massage parlor and had my feet massaged. This was a great experience. So there's food everywhere. There's convenience everywhere. And I truly enjoyed being without a context, not being a mom, not being a coach, not even being Debbie, just go with the flow and see what the day brings. And this really set the tone for my coaching experience with the team as well, because that eventually was the reason why I was there. And as I said, I felt a bit apprehensive about coaching this team. I tried to put myself in their shoes. Like, why is this European Flemish coach flying all the way over to tell us how we need to do it and why we need to do it? And I could sense that maybe there could be some hostility because, you know, why are they flying somebody in who doesn't even know our culture, who doesn't know our business, our market? What is she going to tell us? So those were some of the thoughts going through my head before we had the session. And then we entered the room, and the way I like to do things is to play. I like teams. I like to create a setup in which teams can play, because I truly believe that that's where creativity and innovation comes from. If you allow teams to play, if you allow them to have fun, so they rediscover parts of themselves that they might have lost. So actually, my first question to the team was, what did you do as a kid? What did you truly enjoy doing as a kid that you would like to do more of in this team? And this question opened the forum. So I had them discuss this question in groups of two, and then feedback to me in the whole group. So we had a bit of discussion on what we enjoyed doing most as a kid. And this brought back some of those fun times, those fun memories we had playing, goofing around, making jokes, you know, teasing our parents or our siblings. And this immediately set the atmosphere for the rest of the day. So this is definitely a pointer for those of you who work with teams, those of you who lead teams. Open the day with something fun, with an intriguing question, with something that stimulates the energy of the group. Afterwards, we continued on that playful note and I played a game with them. I actually gave them a task that they had to complete with half of the team members being blindfolded and the other half being the guides for the blindfolded people. And it's a very simple task that I set for teams, but it really uncovers immediately all of the team dynamics that are at play. So without disclosing any particular information about this team, because that's not what it's about, but it's about teams in general, you can have so many talented and wonderful and dedicated people, but when you put them together in one room or in one organization, the talent or the potential just doesn't come out. And this is so intriguing. And I have this little exercise that I give people. So they need to complete a task. And it's really simple. It's bring something from place A to place B, and half of the group's blindfolded and they need to help each other and collaborate. Basically, they need to make a plan. Most of them don't. So you can immediately see whether this team is action focused or more strategically focused, because some teams just talk about it for half an hour and don't start trying. So it really is about observing the team dynamics and finding out what is working in this team and what is not. So I had this team do the exercise, and very quickly they understood, hey, there are some strange things that we keep doing. And these are actually things that we also do in the workplace. So it's not just the exercise. These are patterns that we also do in the workplace. So this really helped us in a very playful way to uncover the basic team dynamics. And I think the total exercise took about 40, 45 minutes to complete. So with these type of simple exercises, you can really expose the essence of a team. Why are they continuously discussing and not focusing on action? Or why do they dive immediately into action without having made a plan? So the thing I really learned from this team is the respect that they have for the different cultures and the different backgrounds and the different styles that people have even. It also hindered them in a way to be outspoken and to state how they would like to do things differently, because they didn't want to insult anybody, or they didn't want to impede, or they didn't want to step on anybody's toes. So this was actually, the respect they felt for each other was actually hindering a constructive collaboration. So the great fear then also was, how can we turn this around without losing the respect that we have for each other, without, you know, we don't want to become abrasive. So teach us how we can be constructive and not become abrasive. So that's what we worked on for a couple of days. And I've learned that the ecosystem principles and the chaos principles I teach are actually truly universal. So culture, or having people from a different culture, it does add an extra layer to the team, but it doesn't change the essence of how groups and ecosystems work. So that was actually quite a relief that the ecosystem principles that I teach are really universal, and that chaos is a universal catalyst for teams to grow. So I truly believe that you as a leader need to shake your team up once in a while. And why is that? Well, a team is an ecosystem, and you need to learn to look at it as a whole. In ecosystems, homeostasis, or stability, equilibrium, means death. When in nature a system is at equilibrium, it will die. And it's actually the same thing for teams and organizations. So even though we're striving for balance, we're striving for equilibrium, this is not a place where we want to be for a long time. An organization is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. So if you don't like the results, you should change your setup. And our contexts continuously change. The market changes, the economy changes, the people you work with change. And if the context changes, well, the setup changes and you will get different results. And is that what you want? Great, keep on doing it. If the results are not what you want, you need to change the setup. So once in a while, you need to shake things up for the team to grow. And sometimes, as I said, this happens naturally with a market change or a change in composition of the team. And sometimes it doesn't. And you have the same team for 5, 6, 7 years in a row, and not much changes. Or they're not really listening to the market changes, and they're not adapting, and they just keep doing what they're doing. And then they will die. The use for this team, or the extra value that this team can add, is no longer there. So as a team, you need to be constantly aware of how the context changes. You need to be aware of what the context is asking of you to do in order to add value. And you need to be aware of how the setup of your team is producing these results that you need to add value to the context. So that's how you look at ecosystems. You look at the team as a whole, because ecosystems have a life of their own. They respond to the context and they do everything in their power to make the ecosystem flourish and thrive. But there are, however, some levers that you can pull to have an impact on the ecosystem. So as I said, context is one of them. Sometimes the context changes on its own. sometimes you can give it a hand. This also applies to a very basic level. At a certain point in time with this team in Singapore, I noticed that the energy was seeping away. The energy was dropping and we were in a very stuffy room. So I literally changed context. I said, guys, we're going to get out of this room. We're going to sit somewhere else with a bit more air, a bit more light, a bit more freedom to move around. And this truly changed, well, first of all, the atmosphere, but also the output that we were able to realize with this team. In the first room, they were like almost falling asleep, so to say. And in the second room, we gained some energy back and some eagerness to get to the results. So context is definitely one of those levers that you can pull. The second one is the components. So these are the people who are actually on your team. So you can either change the components by adding people to the team or changing people around, or you can educate the components and train them and coach them so that individually they become stronger. So that's a second lever you have. Context, components. And then there's connections. How are these components connected to each other and to the context? And this is something we focused on mainly during this time in Singapore. The focus was on building bonds, strengthening bonds, working on trust and psychological safety. And this might seem like it's a lot of effort for very little results, because after those days, we didn't actually have business results, but we built the foundations of trust and psychological safety for people to be able to speak up. Another C, because if you've noticed, all of these levers that I mentioned up till now have a C. So we have context, we have components, we have connections, and another one is composition. So how are these components ranked towards each other? What are the roles and responsibilities? How does the structure work? How does it all fit together? And how does the process look to get to the goal? So this is all about hierarchy. This is about composition. This is about how things fit together. And this is where you need to have the conversation with the team. Does this fit? Aren't there too many gray areas that we get lost in? Because often enough, we do have some job descriptions, but then we lose sight of all the things that fall in between the cracks between job descriptions. So this is definitely something that you need to take into account and talk about with the team. And then the last C, maybe that's the C we could have started with as well, because that's a C of common goal. Without a common goal, a team is just a group of people. It's the common goal that unites everybody. And the common goal needs to be crystal clear and it needs to be common. And everybody's individual goals need to be contributing into this larger common goal. And this is also something that I see as a team coach, where teams often make mistakes. The goal is not clear. And this is also something that comes out in that very simple exercise I do at the beginning when I work with a new team, with half of them being blindfolded, and the very simple task: bring something from point A to point B. People forget about the common goal and people just start diving into actions and start moving around and start being busy, basically. A lot of focus goes into being busy and talking to each other rather than focusing on the common goal and how we're going to get there. So these are five C's that you can use in your work with teams or with your dedicated team in order to pull some levers. And the idea is to shake things up a bit, because I've learned in my 15 plus years of being a coach that chaos really is a catalyst for growth. Homeostasis, equilibrium, it doesn't bring us anything. It brings us temporary peace of mind. But then as you see that things are deteriorating or things are going bad, that's also the end of the internal peace and quiet. So you need that chaos once in a while. And it doesn't have to be like too overwhelming. But in general, my experience is the bigger the chaos, the bigger the growth that comes out of it. So do embrace the chaos. I think that's my final message for you today. Embrace the chaos, because it has the capacity to bring huge transformation. If chaos doesn't come by itself, because things stay more or less stable in the context or within the team, then as a leader, try to create some chaos. Try to think about how can I shake things up so we break the equilibrium, so that we get out of this status quo. That's really it. You need to get out of the status quo. And you can do this by pulling these five levers we talked about: context, components, composition, connection, and common goal. I really hope that these insights have brought you something to work with. And as always, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn or on Instagram with any questions you may have on teams, on chaos, on leadership. I'd be happy to engage in a conversation with you. Looking forward to next time. And in the meanwhile, enjoy your chaos.